This message comes from NPR sponsor, BetterHelp, the online counseling service dedicated to connecting you with a licensed counselor to help you overcome whatever stands in the way of your happiness. Fill out a questionnaire and get matched with a professional tailored to your needs. And if you aren't satisfied with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time, free of charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/Latino to get 10% off your first month. Get the help you deserve with BetterHelp.
How many taco editors are there in the United States of America?
Technically, just me.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, tacos, tacos, and more tacos. How this traditional Mexican dish has become a staple food in the American diet. José Ralat has the kind of job that some foodies dream about. He's the taco editor at Texas Monthly Magazine. Ralat also has a new book out. It's called American Tacos, A History and Guide. The book dives into the evolution of tacos in the United States and their history in the borderlands. When we think of tacos, we usually think of them as a distinctly Mexican food. But according to Ralat, he says that's only half of the story. Tacos are also as American as apple pie. He says, from the breakfast kind to the puffy shell kind, the variety of tacos that have sprung up in different regions of the United States show that this is also a distinctly American food. But the rising popularity of tacos in the United States has, well, made a lot of us connoisseurs. In fact, TV shows like Netflix Taco Chronicles have given a different light to this simple yet so complex of a dish. Last year, basketball superstar LeBron James went viral when he embraced tacos by posting videos of himself eating them enthusiastically while stereotypically saying the phrase,
"Taco Tuesday!"
Now, according to Ralat, tacos have been here long before the hype. They were introduced to the United States around the same time as the American burger was invented. In his book, Ralat discusses the importance of documenting the history of tacos in the United States, and he joins me today to talk about their unique identity north of the border. José Ralat, welcome to Latino USA.
Thanks for having me.
To be like the one and only standing official taco editor of the United States of America, that's a big deal. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's an honor that I don't take lightly because I have the responsibility of not just writing about the food, but writing about the people. And I think that's really the most critical part of the job.
But before we continue, people might be saying, wait, what's going on? And so you're very open about the fact that you stutter. It is something that happens. And so we might as well just say, hey, it happens. And you're cool with basically saying yeah and moving on, right?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Yes. It's a part of my life and it's never stopped me from doing things like live TV or radio segments.
I love that. I got to say, I really do. I completely love that. So what you may not know is that I've been a taco fanatic since probably before you were even born. I'm Mexican. I grew up with this stuff. You know, I mean, my mom made tacos. My abuelita made tacos. But you're Puerto Rican. You weren't growing up with this stuff. So what's the story as to why this Puerto Rican dude ends up falling in love with tacos?
Growing up in the States, I knew about tacos generally speaking, as a fast food product, but tacos as a Mexican food item was in Brooklyn from a Chicana. And I don't know who I fell in love with first, the woman or the food.
So before we get to talking about tacos, which again, we could talk about forever, one of the things that stood out to us is from the beginning of your book, and this is where you refer to something you call the abuelita principle. And having just mastered, Jose, you'll be proud of me, finally having just mastered my abuelita's consomé de pollo, like I finally figured it out, I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe it. I unlocked it. What is this thing about the abuelita principle when it applies to tacos?
So whenever people talk about Mexican food, eventually the conversation rolls around to, well, my abuelita made the best Mexican food. She made the best guisos. Her lengua was the best, or her mole was the best. And for them, that's as far as Mexican food goes. Nothing else counts as Mexican, which is unfortunate because Mexico is a large country with microregions and different cuisines. It's not that simple. We shouldn't box it in. Boxing it in is misguided at best and racist at worst. It could also be maybe so-and-so's grandmother wasn't a good cook. I know that's sacrilegious. I know it's sacrilegious, okay? But my grandmother was a terrible cook, too.
And he takes down abuelitas as well.
Not everyone can cook.
You know, this notion of like when people get that hard taco shell and, you know, people kind of eating it and it always falling apart in your hands. I was like, do you guys don't understand? And I always was concerned about the American taco. Like, is this a problem, basically, that the hard shell taco is the American taco? Is it the American taco? Or am I really being dismissive of, you know, commercialized American tacos, and I'm being, again, a taco elitist, and that there is actually an extraordinary experience of an American taco?
It certainly is the most iconic American taco. It's also a gateway taco for people. It hopefully leads other people to try other tacos. But, you know, let's face it, Taco Bell is historically significant. It helped popularize the taco. It was a gateway taco. And without it, I probably wouldn't have this job.
And you know what? You've also got, like, for example, the last time that I was in Miami, I don't know where I ended up, but oh my God, I was eating some taco fusion that was like knocking my socks off. And again, you write about kosher tacos. You write about West Indian tacos. You write about Korean tacos. So what is all of this, in your view, in this moment, no matter what, you know, no matter what people are saying about Mexicans and what we represent, what in fact does the reality of tacos in our food in the United States say about the integration of tacos as a mainstream food?
It says a lot. You know, a taco is a reflection of its time and place. It is created from population shifts and the people who make it, for example, K-Mex. In the 90s, you had this huge wave of immigration from Korea, and they settled in Southern California next two Mexicans. And what happened? These people traded ingredients.
What do you think is next for the taco? I mean, is there a frontier? Is there a border? Is there a border wall that the taco is going to crash through? Can it evolve further?
Yes. And I've often said that eventually everything makes its way into a tortilla. But then I encountered this flan taco. And I looked at it and I said, that's not what I meant. I did not consider flan as making its way into a tortilla.
Should I be horrified or excited about this, Jose?
Oh, excited, because it's so delicious. It was mind-blowing because I never imagined that this was possible, but it worked. It worked so well. I went back for thirds.
I'm kind of feeling it, you know. I'm like maybe I could try to make that at home, but maybe not. But it's intriguing. So look, the truth is that right now the whole world is living through the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, what are your concerns about, you know, tacos and making it through this pandemic? And what we might lose or gain because of this moment that we're living through.
So I think that the taco will survive and thrive once more. I think taquerias are uniquely positioned because they are usually family-owned, small operations that can adapt quickly to their customers' needs. I think that Mexican food as a whole is unstoppable. Mexican food always wins.
Not that there was a fight or anything going on, but you just declared Mexican food always wins. Okay.
Yeah, well, because it'll come back. These businesses will come back. As long as the landlords are flexible, we should get almost everyone back. At least that's what I hope and that's what I believe.
Thank you, Jose, for sharing your taco stories and taco love affair with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Maria. This has been an honor.
This episode was produced by Juan Diego Ramirez and edited by Luis Treyes. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Sofia Palizacá, Janice Yamoka, Julieta Martinelli, Chiri Montalvo, Alice Escarce, and Alejandra Salazar, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our director of programming and operations is Natalia Fidelhotz. Our digital editor is Amanda Alcantara. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Julia Rocha. Our interns are Sofia Sanchez and Marie Mendoza. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities where children come first. The Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
Taco snob. No, I know, the worst. The worst.
Hey, y'all. I'm Sam Sanders, host of It's Been a Minute. On my show, we catch you up on all the things in news and culture.
The Space Force? I totally missed this. What is the Space Force?
Stop it. Stacey, you don't know about the Space Force?
No.
What?
I've been in my apartment for 4 months.
Oh, man.
Crushing it, Stacey. Thank you. Feeling good.
News without the despair. Listen now to the It's Been a Minute podcast from NPR.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, a man dies in a U.S. immigration detention camp under unusual circumstances.
It literally happened right after his death. His death was on May 20th, and probably early June is when we started getting letters.
Part one of our two-part investigation into the strange death of José de Jesús. That's next time on Latino USA.